Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Steve Buckley. I'm trying out my new Skype headgear here, so hopefully this is coming through loud and clear. I guess I'll find out when my first guest comes on and can tell me if this is working properly. Today's show is, if you go to my blog at ustransparency.com, that's where we'll be, you'll get an idea of what we'll be covering today on the show. And as you can see, we're going to be talking about the citizen engagement tool. There's two different types. Most federal agencies have been, since February 6th, have been offering an opportunity for interested citizens to come up with ideas on how they can be more open, meaning transparent, more participatory, and more collaborative in their interaction with their citizens. So before we get on to that, though, there's a couple things I wanted to cover. I like to make the announcements in the beginning of the show to get some things out of the way as far as what's going on this week. And let's see. The first thing I wanted to point out is that if you don't already know about it or haven't already registered, there is another in the series of Open Government Directive workshops. It will be tomorrow, and I do have Lucas Chiaffi, one of the organizers, here with me. And as far as any late registrations, I'll let him fill people in on how that works. Now, let's see on there. Let me see. Looks a little different now with Skype. Lucas, are you there?
Steve, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay, great.
Hey, yeah, the brief announcement for tomorrow, February 17th, Wednesday. The GSA is partnered to put together this Open Government Directive workshop. All the instructions for people to register, we have just a handful of spots left. They can register at opengovplaybook.org. All the details are there. Once again, that's opengovplaybook.org. And specifically, we have three teams competing with each other, American Idol style, to collaborate in the morning to come up with some great ideas for different agencies to implement across the government. These are going to be evaluated for impact on making government more open and practicality to see if that can actually be done. There'll be a panel of judges from several agencies which will be evaluating all these ideas, and it'll be streamed live once again at opengovplaybook.org starting at 3 p.m. when all the teams are presenting.
Okay. And Lucas, are you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. I believe it's a link at the very top of that page. There's a lot of information at opengovplaybook.com. So if you look at the very top of the page, there's a link there as far as what to do. And the other thing. So there won't be any prizes, though, right? I mean, they'll be competing, but in a friendly way. Is that right?
That's right, just bragging rights.
Okay, and there won't be assignment to make people feel bad?
That's right, and the focus really is about synthesizing all the ideas that have been happening from idea scale to different blogs and just conversations and all the different workshops that have been happening. So we're really boiling it down to some converging thought and synthesizing everything that's been going on so far to come out with actual deliverables.
Okay, and maybe it'll provide a little more of a jump start then to get all this going. I know that's what we're going to talk about today on the show is the ideas that have been coming in and how many and which agencies seem to be getting more ideas than others, and how to pump up the volume, so to speak.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Steve. I'll be listening to the show.
Okay, great. Well, and so that, and I believe Tim Bonneman is with us. I believe that's his number. Let's see.
I'm here, Steve.
Oh, okay, great. I can see the phone numbers, but I can't tell who it is, and that looked familiar. So, anyway, we'll get back to the subject at hand, which kind of does segue from what the Open Government Workshop is going to be doing, you know, getting the best ideas and trying to come up with something that would actually be of use in the open government plans that the various federal agencies, they're each working on their own plan. And certainly you and I have known each other. We met last summer and at the and I know you're very closely connected with the a lot of organizations like the International Association for Public Participation and the National Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation. So even though you have a pretty good tech background, the non-tech acts, you're pretty familiar with the non-tech, the social aspects as well. Is that a pretty fair assessment, or can you want to elaborate on that?
That's a very fair assessment. Thanks.
Okay. So, but now we're talking, I guess, about the numbers and so forth, and how you were able to take what you did. Can you and I did point people to the blog posting for today and the links and so forth. As far as what you had, there's a link there. I guess it's maybe the fourth paragraph. It says Tim Bonneman's coverage of this topic at his blog. So if people were to just now, they're looking at that link, and then they're clicking on it, and it's coming up. For instance, I'm giving it time to come up because, so we're all on the same page here, and
it's a bunch of posts there, and I'm also doing the daily tracking on GovLoop and on a forum thread. It's just collecting some of the metrics that IdeaScale exposes publicly on the website. There is some additional information that's available via the API, but I'm not accessing that. I'm just using what shows on the website on the that page that each project guide comes with.
Okay, so there are 27 agencies in all.
Mm-hmm. So on my count, there's 27 agencies, 24 of which are using IdeaScale. One is using User Voice, and a couple are using a proprietary, some blog. But I don't know what platform exactly, just a blog to discuss. But I'm focusing my tracking mainly on those 24 that are using IdeaScale.
And that is that easier for you for the data to be scraped? Is that the proper term? Scraped?
I checked the other two sites. There's not too much activity going on, so it doesn't completely screw up my metrics here. But yeah, on a daily basis, I just go to IdeaScale and grab those numbers.
Okay. So actually, on this particular, I know you've posted. If people go back a few days. Right now, I'm looking at your blog site where it's, and the title is OpenGov Tracker. So even though that's not what you did, if people go back a few days, they will see what you had captured as far as those agencies' website. I guess the good thing about what Open Government Tracker does is it actually shows some. A bar chart.
Yeah, that's a pretty awesome little site there. And they're actually going. They're taking data. They're taking some data from via the API. So we have our metrics are slightly different. For instance, they're not counting the comments that that are in the how can we improve this dialogue or this tool section on each site, and they're also not counting the comments that have been deemed off topic. So, but trend-wise, we should see the same kind of, you know, trend. I mean, we have the same kind of, you know, the agencies that are very, that are seeing a lot of activity, like NASA and the VA and such. So we're seeing the same trends. We're just not, didn't have the exact same numbers. It doesn't matter. It's all about kind of seeing what the general trend is.
General trends, right. It's not like there's going to be any prize, like American Idol or anything like that.
To just get a feel for how the consultations are developing. Is there any activity? Is it, you know, is it slowing down? Is it speeding up? Does any of the outreach effort that we can see, like, you know, sometimes we catch an email that an agency may send out. So you can kind of see, you know, did that have an effect? Did more people join after they sent that out and stuff like that? But it's not really about the, you know, whether there's, you know, 500 comments or 800 comments. It doesn't really matter that much in my view.
Uh-huh. Now, what you and I should say that one of the two developers of, we're talking about somebody else's project here. I just want to make sure people understand that OpenGov Tracker is not something that you did, but that Robbie, right, a couple of people from NASA mashed up, I guess, came up with over the snowstorm in D.C., and one of them was going to be on the show today, but then at the last minute I heard that she was in a meeting running late, so she may join. Jesse Cohen Sharp may or may not join us. So if that's the case, that we won't be, we're just going to go ahead and since you've been talking with them, I think we can give a pretty fair representation of what you're doing versus what they're doing. But before we go on to look at the bar chart there, I just wanted to make sure people understood the benefit of what you had done. I know there's something called I was trying to keep up with the questions and ideas that various agencies had, you know, how things were going along before the bar chart, before the OpenGov Tracker came up, and there's something called a fire hose. Maybe that would be of use to people who would rather get something in their email box rather than checking the bar chart, you know,
right,
every day. Maybe we can go talk a little bit about how that can be set up.
Yeah. So one challenge with these, with most of these consultations, especially when they go to scale and you have like 700 people participating, it's really hard to keep track of what's being said. If you're not tuned in like every day and kind of keep up with, you know, new comments and what is, you know, being voted up and voted down, or, you know, new interesting insights that people are sharing, it's really hard to follow up. There's no most of the time there's no system in place that gives you a good synthesis, you know, at the end of the day. And because I didn't want to go back to every site and read everything like on their site, I just cobbled together a combo RSS, and there's a service, Yahoo Pipes, that allows you to just grab a bunch of RSS feeds and you know, combine them. So I'm kind of following there, just scanning. You know, I don't read every comment, but I'm just trying to scan. So in addition to the hard numbers, the metrics, the things that you can count, I also try to look at the quality aspect of the consultation. So, you know, you may see moderators, replying to complaints, like censorship complaints, or they may explain the community ground rules, or they may. I actually spotted someone correct a typo in the title of the idea. I thought that was pretty neat. So you can kind of see the quality of ideas that are coming in, and also the moderation effort. That's additional. And the feed is the publicly available. So if you go to my blog, you scroll down a few posts. I think it's from a couple weeks ago or last week. You can just subscribe to it, and then you can see it in your RSS reader. If you use RSS, then maybe that's good for you.
Well, I did. I guess if you follow the what I'm talking about, I want to make sure people understand where, you know, if they're sitting at their computer listening to this show, that they're keeping along with us here. And if they're looking at the page that is your blog about the open government tracker, which is where we last left them, then down at the bottom of that page, near the end of your posting, you do refer back to your tracking thread. There's a highlight there that says, "This metrics dashboard is a nice addition to my tracking thread," and that's highlighted as a loop, as a link, I'm sorry, on GovLoop, where we also keep an eye on blah, blah, blah. So if they were to click on tracking thread, then that that will, of course, lead to back to what we were just talking about how you were capturing this and putting it on the fire hose. Now, is there a link there for the?
Yeah, there should be. Or you just search my blog for fire. I mean, I just named it fire hose. There's no official.
Yeah. Line. Okay. Well, there's something. Yeah, somewhere in one of your blog. I just want to point them. So if somebody wanted to get something, and I did sign up for it myself, so now I get an email every day, or I guess with, only thing is, and maybe I'm not doing it right, maybe there's a better way to do this, but I do get an email, and it tells, and it does have a listing, but it seems to have all of the,
I don't know why that is. I haven't been playing with pipes much, but yeah, I also get everything refreshed, so you kind of have to just start looking from.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to warn people, if they did get the email thing, they might be a little confused if they kept reading this. It's not changes. It's everything, every day, everything that has been posted, every day, including the new stuff, but the old stuff too. So I just wanted to, so people didn't get frustrated if they wanted to opt for that way of being updated. But otherwise, the only other option is to sign up for all 24 or any agency that you're, is to register at the links for the various agencies, and then I believe you get new messages every time somebody adds a new idea at that particular agency.
Yeah, which is not really convenient and kind of time consuming, and
Yeah.
But I think that's actually a great a lot of room for improvement for some of these tool builders to really, you don't even have to have a tool. You could just offer like an additional newsletter on top of your whatever tool you're using that just, shares daily, a couple paragraph updates, like the highlights. What did we see today? Anything interesting come up? Any interesting responses that we share that we think everybody should be aware of, right? Because you get a lot of repetition because people, and again, once you hit a few 100 participants, people aren't aware of everything that's been said already. So it's repeat comments on the same issue, and that could be avoided. But let's just be happy with what we're seeing so far.
Yeah. This, of course, as you know, and other people know, this is very similar to what happened last summer. When the White House had their open government dialogue, which used the IdeaScale platform, at least for the brainstorming phase.
Right.
And it's not unusual to expect perhaps that it had been refined or improved a little bit.
And I think it has. I mean, it is similar. It's using the same tool, but I think a few differences that I would point out definitely is it's going for much longer. It's going for, I think, 5 or 6 weeks, which seems to be a much more healthy time frame. Last year, the period that counted was just 1 week, and it took people at least a week to figure out that this thing was actually there. So by the time they joined, the project had already moved on to phase two, which was kind of a little bit frustrating to most people. So that's different. I think that's better. I think the community management and moderation efforts have been greatly improved. So that's good. And I think those are the two obvious things that I would notice that have been improved compared to last year's initiative.
Mm-hmm. The moderation. I think last summer, during the open government dialogue, which really didn't apply to any particular agency, it was, you know, they were asking for ideas in general, with the idea that this the best ideas would be incorporated into the open government directive, which came out about 5 months later. But last summer, it seemed to be they were taking almost, it was almost as if they were taking pains not to moderate.
Yeah, they were taking a very hands-off approach, and it really the quality of the discourse deteriorated when the phase one was taken over by, people who doubt that the president was born in the U.S. So, and I think it's from what I've been seeing so far on these, just looking at samples, it looks like they're much quicker to respond. It seems there's more staff. There's actually at least a couple of people on each site that are responding as the official voice of the agency. I think they're doing a pretty good job, keeping things on topic, making clear to people that, this is really just about the open government implementation of the open government directive, and it's not about other important issues that certainly exist. So.
Right. Yes, I think I've been online involved in online discussions for about 20 years now, and I guess I was a little taken aback by this approach that people can self-moderate. And it's like whether it's face-to-face or online, then you definitely need to have somebody in charge. And as long as you set the tone, then people are clear about what is off-topic and what isn't off-topic and what's proper in behavior and so forth and so on, then as time goes on, you don't have it's understood, and so you don't have to be always pulling people back on topic and so forth and so on. So if you do a good job in the beginning, then I think people understand what's acceptable behavior and what isn't. Just like with kids. Right? Well, you're learning more about that, right, Tim?
It's a challenge. I mean, they're doing a pretty good job trying to figure this thing out. I mean, just as a general kind of looking across the agencies, certainly the ones that are getting more traction, like the top five, six agencies, I think doing a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. And I think you had mentioned in another previous conversation with me that you had seen the number 500 moderators out there.
Well, I read that Dave McClure had mentioned. He was I saw a quote or reference.
I saw that on John Kaminsky's blog.
But I haven't seen that many.
Yeah. After that, I did speak with someone at GSA, and I forget who it was, but they said I think they said they trained 10 people per agency, which would make it about.
And that's great. I mean, the turnaround.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So that's still.
If you look at some of these, like people have complaints. Like, for instance, a very common thing is like someone posts an idea that has nothing to do with the Open Government Directive, and as per the ground rules, that idea gets quote unquote promoted to the off-topic bucket, and so then people are disappointed or frustrated or complain, and then. It's important to really, respond quickly and explain, again, the rules and why they're doing this. And I've seen a lot of that, and that's really one of the key things you want to do when you engage people. It's just a courtesy, one of the key improvements compared to last year.
Mm-hmm. Of course, now they're trying to, they don't want to have it be too quiet because some of the agencies haven't gotten any ideas. And I think if people did go to the OpenGov Tracker website and take a look at and that's opengovtracker.com, but it's also listed on the under the description of today's show. But there's a section for agencies that that have been kind of quiet, like, and they have it under needs some love.
Yeah, that's nice.
These agencies don't have a lot of input. They need some love. Please help.
Yeah, it's still early. I mean, I don't know. You know, in detail, all the details about each and every agency's outreach efforts. I know that EPA, for instance, tweeted, and I got an email because I'm one of their mailing lists, but I don't know how many people are on that list. I don't know if every agency has already done that. And still, you know, it's only 10 days in, and they have another, 3 weeks, right? So it's
mm-hmm.
4 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it just seemed to...
And also, I mean, it's a kind of a dry topic also. It's not, you know, you won't see the levels of participation, I think, ever on an open government forum that you saw during the, you know, change.gov discussions on healthcare, or, you know, where you get, like, 1,000 comments within, I don't know, like half an hour, right? And, and everybody has it's very opinionated and has a lot of things to, you know, stories to share. Open government, you know, sure, important, but so I think it's good to remember that it's also about quality. And if you get, you know, maybe a few dozen good ideas in your first experiment as an agency to do these kinds of consultations, I think that's good, and you just take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the part of it, I think, and I think this will be raised at mentioning the Open Government Directive Workshop tomorrow. I'm going to make sure this gets raised there, is the idea that if you want to keep people engaged in a conversation, whether it's this or your spouse or a friend or something like that, or a customer, is that if you provide some feedback, and if they tell you they have an idea about something and you just nod your head and go, and then basically don't give them any active feedback, then they're going to come to the conclusion that you're just placating them and you're just pretending to listen. And I've been caught doing that with my wife. She said, okay, what did I just say? I'll go, oh.
There is a bit of feedback going on in that I've seen in some occasions where some of the moderators will leave a comment and say, well, you know, thank you, this is a good idea, you know, we'll look into it. But again, I think the next step would be to really have a weekly or maybe even daily, depending on volume, kind of, you know, quick synthesis of what people talk about it and give instant feedback, like, you know, maybe highlight an idea that really, you know, knocked your socks off. It was just, you know, oh my God, this is like the best idea we've heard in ages. You know, this is something we want to hear more of, you know, that kind of thing. I think would be very valuable to share that kind of feedback on a regular basis while the consultation is still ongoing, and not wait until April, you know, to hear back. And you're right. I think it's important. It's a very good way of motivating people to come back and dig deeper into what they want to talk about.
Yeah. Otherwise, they think if they're just putting their ideas in a suggestion box, and the suggestion box is just going into a black hole, then if they don't get any feedback, then...
I mean, from what I've been reading, it's the feedback that agencies or some of the moderators are giving is more hidden in the comments, so it's not readily available when you go to the site, right? You have to kind of look for it, but I haven't seen the black hole, but yeah, they could do more and making it for, and most importantly, make it convenient for people. Like, if I left a comment the first week, do I have to go back to the site, like, you know, 2-3 times a week to stay updated? I think, you know, who has the time to do that? You know, I'd rather sign up for a, you know, temporary newsletter and get the weekly digest, right? And then if something comes up, then, you know, I can always go back and maybe continue, you know, my thoughts. But I think most people aren't full-time you know, followers of these dialogues. So, you know, make it as easy as possible for them to give their input and then kind of stay on top of things. And
right. Well, I think it's part of, well, if you would put on your public participation hat, I guess, is that things like the International Association for Public Participation and EPA, and I believe I was looking at their, you know, like the 5 steps or the 7 steps to public participation, and they both have the idea that you have to give people feedback about what their ideas are, and that the, and that I think was missing from, like, from what happened from last summer's request for ideas, is that people gave their ideas and 5 months later the Open Government Directive comes out and they couldn't tell, well, what happened to my idea. It got several hundred votes and it didn't, there wasn't a
thing that was completely missing during the first phase of last year's Open Government Dialogue. It was a lot better during the second phase, I believe. It was, they actually did summarize each, they had it broken down into like 5 or 6 different topics, and then, you know, every few days would summarize what they had heard in the comments, and that was helpful. And they also were more active in you know, engaging in the comments. There were some staff was actually present and you know, thanking people and welcoming and, you know, giving feedback. And but yeah, the first phase was kind of a mess, and that's not very rewarding, right? You want to, I mean, people spend their time as, you know, citizens, and they you know, a lot of them are really very, you know eager to share and very genuine and you know, wanting to share their ideas, and so it's, in my view, it's just a courtesy to make sure you follow up and, you know, make sure to thank them and share what you did with the input.
Right. Well, and that was, I understand that we both all agree that that was an experiment in some sense of the word. So they were able to use it, but at the same time, as you're experimenting, you need to learn and improve and so forth and so on. I never saw a yes. That's the aspect of all of this, is the idea that maybe some people out there have a better idea about how to do this, and maybe they even have a better idea about how to listen better. So that's the you know, the continuous evaluation that you, as you put it, and continuous feedback, and that's what this whole, I mean, if you look at the whole program in whole, that's what it's supposed to do. How can we set up a program where the government becomes better listeners? And
if you look, there's actually a lot of feedback coming in. I mean, not a lot, but there's a significant amount of feedback coming in from people in the field of you know, participation and you know, public engagement, and I know the NCPD and IAP2 both have people that have left some very thoughtful comments on these various sites. So yeah, and again, I think if they keep their word, I think they're going to share the their findings in April, as soon as April. So I'm actually quite confident that we're going to see fairly timely feedback.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, it won't be their findings. It'll be in the form. It'll be just like that's when the April 7th is when each agency is supposed to issue their plan. And granted, that doesn't mean it's going to be written in stone and never be changed ever again. But they'll be coming out with their supposedly a workable, even if it's a working draft plan, and then
maybe the only improvement is that it didn't take, you know, half a year.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think even before then, the idea that if they come out with that plan, at some point, they need to do that active listening.
That'd be great. I mean, it looks like they all have their Slash Open site set up. And I think most of the agencies have blogs of their own. So, you know, maybe after 3 weeks, you know, 3 weeks into the process, do an interim summary that people can, you know, consume in a few minutes, rather than having to go into the forums and read each and every comment, which no sane person kind of has the time to do. So that's definitely something I would highly recommend to put in the effort of synthesizing what they've heard and feeding it back to people, right? And oftentimes what's interesting when someone feeds you back what they heard, it's not always what you think you said, so you know what they should have heard. So that's a good opportunity to fine tune the conversations a little bit.
Well, that's clarification, and basically that's just another word for making things more transparent, making things more clear. And that's what somebody, I think I heard Lena Trudeau from the National Academy of Public Administration, I watched a video, and she says she was relating what somebody else said to her, but this is all about creating a conversation and having a conversation with between the government and the citizens. And even though there's been one before, it's like, how do we have... So now we're having a conversation on how to make our existing conversation better.
Right. I would add to that it's often a outcome-oriented conversation. You're not just having a chat with, you know, citizens. You're actually promising to do something with, you know, what you're hearing. And one of the challenges, and I think they're doing a little bit of a better job here this time around, is to be very clear on what it is, in fact, that you promise participants, right? Are they going to have any impact? What kind of impact can you commit to? Sometimes you can't commit too much, right? Sometimes because of the scope, you know, of the issue or the timeline or other dependencies, you can maybe just listen to some of the concerns, but you can't, for instance, have the participants, write the policy that you want to put in place, right? There's different ranges of, you know, levels of participation, and it's always good to be very clear up front about what you, you know, can deliver. And it's a little bit better, I think, but they could still improve on that, I think. It's definitely better than this other project last year. But as you can see, some people still come to the site and are surprised when they find out that, you know, the idea that they posted was not considered on topic, and that shows you that it's still not perfect. So.
Right, getting better all the time, like the Beatles song, right? I won't sing it. But that's it's a continuous evaluation, and that's the only way you can have continuous improvement, and that's what it's all about. And so it's kind of like modeling the behavior that where you want to go. So, and that requires a certain amount of humility. I think that having worked in Washington for 25 years at several federal agencies, the culture change that they're talking about is moving to one of humility, or more humility than it is now, because when... Typically, or historically, when you try stuff in Washington or in a bureaucracy, federal bureaucracy, or any kind of bureaucracy, innovative things, if they fail, then you don't get rewarded for a failure, and you get punished, really. So that's
I have no visibility into that. I just hope that that's not the case. I mean, this is so. I think for some agencies more than others. At least from where I see things, it's definitely new, and you want to give it some time, and you want to, you know, you want to have those experiments, and you may have a few, you know, projects that, you know, didn't make a dent or didn't go too well, or but you want to be able to you know, improve your skills and get better, and so that needs some time. And I don't think, you know, after this round of consultations, they all going to be, you know, perfect at this. So yeah, hopefully they have superiors that are on board and are with learning these skills. So.
Yeah, well, like I said, people who aren't used to having conversations, you know, kind of come out of their shell, just like, and we're talking about really, they call it customer relationship management. It's the same thing. And was it Alexander Shalong? He calls it citizen relationship management. So it's basically the same thing. How do you set up a an ongoing conversation with people who you haven't been talking to very much? And it takes a little while to warm up and gain some trust, and I think that's any type of, you know, you want to create some type of community and some type of trust so that when you see, when you hear somebody say something, you'll know it's really going to happen, and you're not just being placated just to make it look like you're listening, you know, so forth and so on. But it's kind of funny because in a way, people think that the existing, all this talk about open government and conversations with the citizens and collaboration and participation started last year, but agencies have for decades been putting out and proposing their, how they propose to do things, like whether it's build a bridge or propose new regulations on you know, car seats or whatever. It's not very well known because most people have never heard of something called the Federal Register, but that's basically a daily phone book sized document that contains all proposed regulations and where to send your comments and so forth. And now, of course, it's online, but for decades and decades it was they've been going through a process, and it's kind of ironic in a way because their process, which they've been doing, like I said, for decades, always, whenever they propose regulations and then receive comments, then at some later point they would adopt the regulations, and they would, in adopting the regulations, they would say, okay, here's what we came up with, and they will put a notice in the Federal Register saying, here's the new regulations we came up with, but they will summarize, at least. They won't say every single comment. They won't address every single comment, but they will do a pretty good job of summarizing the fact that, well, some people wanted to do this and some people wanted to do that, and, you know, some commenters, so forth and so on, and at least they would pick, you know, the main things. And so there would be that feedback, so at least you could recognize that there were 97 comments that had to do with child care, child safety seat belts or something like that, that they weren't strong enough or something like that.
One of the things that will be emerged from this whole open government directive, you know, effort is more convenient ways for citizens to just stay up to date on these opportunities to participate. We talked on my blog, but also in the GovLoop forum about the need for outreach, right? How do you actually get the word out? I know someone posted, I think Gofresh posted about, you know, we need a PR effort for open government. And it's a big challenge, right? You actually have to make people aware that something is going on. You have to motivate them. And I think in the future, you know, and with the open government dashboard that's going to happen at some point, I think, you know, there should be ways for citizens to just get notifications based on, you know, where they're located or based on interest. And whenever there's an opportunity to contribute and participate, you just, you know, you get notified, and it's just as normal and as easy as, you know, subscribing to an agency's newsletter or, you know. So I think that, yes, I mean, the opportunity has always been there, and some of the agencies have a long tradition of actually doing excellent public participation. I think the opportunity for improvement there is to make it more convenient for citizens to know about all the opportunities they do have for participation.
Actually, I guess that proves you, what you just said proves that great minds think alike, because that was one of my ideas from last summer. I called it the mygov.gov, which I might have borrowed from somebody else, you know, but the idea that you could go one place and say.
I think I left it like on the OSP blog. I left a comment recently on the dashboard. You know, it's just and it's pretty simple, right? Just require agencies to report any upcoming consultations or other, you know, participatory efforts that they're planning. You know, list the ones that are ongoing, list the ones that are upcoming, list the ones that are completed, so you can go back and look at the archives and make that really convenient. Because yes, it's been there, but you have to get the book or it's just not, most people never get to the point where they actually look up, you know, the car seat consultation.
Right, right. And I know you'll be dealing with car seats for a while.
Just a couple. So.
Couple? Yeah, you're going to have to get another one. The idea that you could put in a profile of your and indicate that you had children and whatever, and then, of course, they'd be able to say, put it into a database that said any child-related product recalls or proposed rules or whatever that had to do with child care seats. That's kind of I'm sure that would be set up somehow so that that it can be matched with all those people who indicate they have small children. And of course, if they age out, you know, 10 years from now, you won't hopefully, you know, be set up so you won't still be getting email notices about child care seats when your kids are no longer needing them. But it has to be set up something like that, and that's one of the things to do as far as getting a database. But USA, I mean, it's already being done now with USAjobs.gov. You fill out a profile, and you tell them what you're looking for, what kind of job, and where, and what your degree is, and so forth and so on, and all the agencies come up with they dump their job announcements into one great big data bin. And then they're sorted out and sent out, and you're notified if, you know, you get a hit.
Seems like a pretty, solvable challenge. But, yeah, I mean, getting your stakeholders, identifying your stakeholders and getting them, inviting them to the, making sure they're on board with what you're doing is a key thing that has, by the way, little to do with, you know, the technology you end up using. It all has to happen prior to, to you kicking off the actual discussions that have to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of work that has to go into that before you even start talking about a particular issue, right?
And I was just reading something, I guess, Tim O'Reilly, it touches on this, but Tim O'Reilly came out with some book about practices. I thought I muted that. I see. I didn't mute that. Oh, well, that's one of the things when you use Skype. I'm just going to let that go to voicemail. Sorry about that. They came out with something recently. It's supposedly some... Oh, my God. Okay, there we go. Well, now I know what to do for the next show. The idea that, Doug Shuler was one of the contributors to this book that just came out that Tim O'Reilly put out about practicing, open government and so forth and so on. And he was saying that in addition to there being new muscles that the government needs to use to have these conversations and do things differently, that, you know, because if you haven't used a certain muscle for a while, or, you know, it's going to be very sore, and you can't just expect people to jump out of their chair and start running down the street. But the thing that for citizens as well, it won't be handed to them on a platter. They're going to have to be educating themselves. So if they do get a notice about a project or something that affects them, they can't just expect to show up and bitch about it.
Yep.
They'll have to read and get up to things. So there will be requirements and expectations for
I mean, that really goes, that goes beyond all the, the consultations of the day. I think it goes to the, it goes more to capacity building. And I was at a conference last year in New Hampshire, where actually we met, the focus was how to embed some of these, more deliberative practices in education, in universities, and in society in general. And yes, it absolutely has to do with skill building and just to have a good dialogue is not as easy as it may sometimes seem. And we definitely saw that. I think that in general the conversations this time around are much more civil. I remember last year there was much more, or at least they're moderated more quickly, so you don't actually get to, they don't disturb the other participants as much. But last year we just saw some very ugly comments too. So it's a skill building challenge that goes beyond the current project that we're seeing.
Well, and I think when you said last summer, I'm thinking not only of the online dialogue that the White House had, but also during August, after our conference, everybody who showed up at the town hall meetings that were mostly involving, the healthcare reform during the Congress recess, where people would show up who had never shown up before, and under some, fear that they would lose their healthcare or, something, they were concerned, and so many people genuinely so, but the sense I got was that they asked a lot of these people, have you ever gone to one of these before? And they said no. The only sense they had about how one should be run or what the behavior or what the expectations what should be expected of them as far as civility was that.
If people are interested, those. More for people who already do facilitation, but IEP2 has a new course out on rage, like how to deal with conversations that are just too heated and not productive at all. So how do you rein those things in? And the thing is that requires really skilled facilitators and good process people to deal with these kinds of very challenging setups. So that's something that I guess more people will learn and hopefully will rely on more in the future. I think there's lots of people who have these skills, and from what I'm hearing, they're more than willing to contribute to making these participation efforts better and more productive.
And I guess the aspect there is, there's a positive education, but also there's miseducation that's happening now. So when people, the point I was kind of making is that if people have only been seeing town hall, the only previous experience to town hall meetings has been what they've seen on TV, then of course the only town hall meetings you see on TV are the contentious ones. You never see the good ones. And so, consequently, they show up at these meetings expecting all hell to break out. And so, is it any surprise that they're all kind of like, pumped up for conflict? And then when I saw some of the Congress people, like Barney Frank, was combative with the people. So you have the congressman running the town hall meeting, and they have no skills whatsoever in how to bring things down from a boil and so forth. In fact, he made things worse by having it be combative. So not just educating people how to do this, but also stop the miseducation and point out that no, that is the wrong thing. You do not take a cell phone call. Like I think I saw Sheila Jackson took a cell phone call in the middle of a town hall meeting that she was running. So it was like wrong.
Wrong. If Barney Frank has the skills, as soon as you become a party of that conflict or debate type setup, it's probably a good idea to find a neutral third-party convener to manage both sides, right? And but that's, I mean, that's also a resource issue. I mean, those, you know, it costs.
Well, I think everybody has, for instance, the League of Women Voters. I think they would have no problem at all being a neutral party for any congressman who asked, and so that would be one way. But yeah, there needs to be some neutral, respected trust agents that people can rely upon, and so they don't get the idea that this is all about fighting. It's about a conversation. It's not about going someplace to have a fight. Anyway. There was one thing I wanted to. That's right. If we go back to, let's see, I want to make sure that everything that I talked about on the my blog thing. Let's see. Did we cover everything? Monitoring. Oh, there is one other link that I did point to, the GovLoop conversation for people who want to, you and others, and including the people who came up with GovTracker and Steve Ressler from GovLoop and so forth, have been having a conversation on GovLoop about this very thing. So if people wanted to, or are listening to this later, still want to chime in and throw in their thoughts, that would probably be the best place to talk about it. And there's a link there. You do have to register for GovLoop, but you do not have to be a government employee to do that. You can just be a concerned citizen. And there was one other thing that I wanted to point to, and that involved a group called 4C Results, who they just came out with a report today on measuring transparency, as a matter of fact. I think it's the first time that this has been done, but I wanted to, I'm just making sure I got the right link here. I didn't put it there. I will add it later to the to my blog list there, but if people go to www.4cresults, and that's spelled F-O-R-E-S-E-E, results.com. And they look in the right-hand column under What's New for February 16th. They have something there called the Inaugural 4C Results E-Government Transparency Index, where they've started asking people who visit government websites about how clearly they understood, you know, what it was. Were they was it clear to them what was on the website was what they were hoping to get, and so forth and so on. But you do have to sign up to get this white paper, but at least it's something that's very I think significant in that the idea that you can, as far as transparency and clarity and so forth goes, that the best way to do to figure out if you're being clear to somebody is to ask them. So I know you're probably interested in that, Tim, but I wanted to make sure you were aware of that. But we'll probably be talking about that more since they just released it, I guess, today. So we're getting close to a lady just, I'm not, did you hear that? I'm just curious. Did you hear that? Okay, a little voice came on and said we have 90 seconds left. So if there's something else you wanted to say that we forgot, now's the time to say it, Tim. And I appreciate you coming on the show. And Tim Bonneman is at intellitix.com. And if you're not sure how that's spelled, then I guess, like I said, just go to ustransparency.com, and you'll see all the links that we talked about today. And go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, So thanks for having me. I'm just going to be, you know, just continue to keep an eye on how these things develop. It's still early, only 10 days into the CEASE project, and I'm sure we'll see more, a lot more input and activity will last over the next few weeks. So definitely want to keep an eye on it.
And I think this is kind of last minute, and yes, everybody is in D.C. is catching up from missing a whole week of work. So unfortunately, they weren't able to join us today, but I'm sure they'll be joining us in the future, all those people involved in the government, that is, who are working on this. So, okay, well, that's another show of Open Government Radio. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week when we'll talk some more about implementing the Open Government Directive.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you very much. I'm Steve Buckley, and we'll see you later.